just for the record, I believe we're having, there's a meditation now, and that's the, am I correct? And then there's one, is there, am I correct still? There's another meditation at 9:45, and then there's Mass is at 11 o'clock. Okay. So our present meditation is on the meaning of heaven. And the focus of our meditation is Christ's ascension into heaven. Christ, after his resurrection, remained on earth only 40 days. And after 40 days, he literally, and we have to say this literally, ascended into heaven. No mere symbolic gesture. Of course, having a risen body, Christ did not have to travel through the, well, millions of light years of space as though it took him, well, who knows, how many years to get to heaven. We might begin by first identifying the importance of reflecting on heaven. We should grasp, as we've been saying, the meaning of everything that we believe at the risk of losing by having stolen what we believe. And if there is one mystery of our faith that we all desperately need to understand, it is the fact that Jesus Christ rose from the dead, ascended into heaven, and is there now waiting for us. I would like to subdivide the subject of our meditation into, if you please, seven categories. In other words, what is heaven? Any one of these would be meditation enough, but we have seven. Heaven, first of all, is a reward. We believe that we have a free will with which we are to cooperate with God's grace. And we cooperate with God's grace, as a result of which God rewards. That's all reward is. It is, call it the wage, call it the earnings. In theological language, it is the merit that we gain for having used our free will in cooperation with the will of God. If we further ask, what are we being rewarded for? Well, throughout the life of Christ, and especially just before his passion and death, he made clear that the one area or aspect of our cooperating with the grace of God is in the practice of charity. Well, let's remember that the practice of charity is not only, in fact, not even mainly, the love of our neighbor. It is surely that. It is, first of all, the love of God, and thereby therefore, the love of others. By loving God with our whole heart, with our whole soul, with our whole mind, and with all our strength, we are practicing charity. It is well to remind ourselves that Christ added to our love of God a word we do not find in the Old Testament. Christ tells us to love God with our whole heart, with our whole soul, and with our whole mind and all our strength. How then do we love God? With that charity that will deserve or merit heaven for us. I keep repeating, whole heart, whole soul, whole strength, but with emphasis with our whole mind. In an academically sophisticated country like yours or mine, and in a given year we have over 5 million Americans on college campuses. Loving God with our whole mind means accepting with our minds, submitting our minds to everything which God has revealed. Then, heaven is our reward by loving others, even as Christ has loved us. How's that? Selflessly, generously, patiently, even to dying for others, if this is the will of God. There are two passages from the Gospel of Matthew that are pertinent here. Christ's injunction, do not lay up treasures for yourselves on earth, where moth devours and rust consumes. Christ tells us, build up treasures for yourselves in heaven. In other words, heaven is a reward provided we have worked. We get paid for our services. And another word for being paid for our services to God is merit or reward. I think this needs more than ordinary emphasis in countries like yours and mine. Why? Because if there is one distinctive feature of non-Catholic, especially Anglo-Saxon Christianity, it is the denial of merit. Meaning what? And there is no way you could possibly deserve to earn anything from God. Well, as Catholics, we know better. We can earn from God by using our free will to merit. Anytime you find a book in which the word merit, either as noun or verb, occurs in a Protestant writing, call me up. Collect. My number is 313-927-1605. Call me up. That Protestant should be excommunicated by his denomination. We have a free will. Except for God, we wouldn't have that free will. Yet, mysteriously, it is not as though we have any claim on God for having used the free will he gave us, but God in his mercy rewards us for using our freedom according to his will. Freedom. Was it Lord Acton who made this statement? Oh, freedom, how many crimes are committed in your name? everybody is talking about freedom. Yet, authentic, genuine freedom, free will, not conditioned by heredity, environment, or education. We are free. Is the fundamental source of our reward, which we deserve, so God tells us, from Him. Then, of course, the crowning invitation we all expect to hear. Come, blessed of my Father, possess the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. Then, as we know, we're going to be rewarded, especially, mainly, primarily, you supply more adverbs for the charity we've practiced towards others. Whatever other resolutions you make during the retreat, this must be one. We all, in greater or less measure, daily fail in the practice of Christ-like charity towards others. Heaven then is a reward. And as we've been saying during these days, the essence of charity is to provide people with what they need. And what is the single, deepest, constant need of every human heart? To be, you finish the word, loved. It means that we think of people. We are thoughtful, as the expression goes. And in the categories, remember the four categories that we started with? There are some people that are, as we say, easy to love. Those are the enjoyable characters. There are some people that are hard to love. If only they were in Tanzania. But no. They're right here, as big as a house. We love by enduring people. Now, you don't keep telling them. In fact, you try not even to show it. Among the rules of the missionaries of charity that Mother Teresa got into her constitutions is to be cheerful. Now, if some people, in showing your love for them, the last thing you would want to be as cheerful, because but no, you. I may have mentioned I was on the stage for 6 years before we entered the Society of Jesus. And it's not that you put on, and the characters that I played, it's got to be genuine. True love gives joy, and cheerfulness is the expression of joy. If we're going to merit heaven, that's the word, we've got to work. In these last two meditations before we close the... We're closing today, are we? See? Want to make sure that we put the pieces together. Be sure that you examine your consciences on how much you work. And listen to this. Other things being equal, the harder something is to do, that you know God wants you to do it, the more merit you gain. Isn't that great? Now, the difficulty shouldn't be something like, for example, you don't want to get up in the morning. Most people don't, by the way. But provided it's something which is natural to, well, human nature. most people would much prefer talking to writing. Maybe give you some suggestions. Look, I want to be down to earth so we can get up to heaven. And we're going to merit heaven as a reward. We don't run away from things that we don't like to do, like writing. Most people find it much easier to talk than to write. Do you know why? Because we can talk without thinking. You cannot write. Otherwise, you doodle. Right. From the first days of our novitiate, Athanasius was no literary giant. But we are told to write. Keeping a journal or a diary. And make it as spiritual as you can. Do not hesitate to compose prayers to our Lord. Dear Lord, : and then tell him what's on your mind. One of the main purposes for writing, hear it, is to discipline the mind. In the East, the Oriental people compare the human mind to a monkey. I would compare the human mind to a squirrel, jumping all around. If we're going to practice especially the kind of charity that will merit heaven for us, we've got to have a disciplined mind. And there is nothing, I repeat, after 40 years in the priesthood, that I'm more convinced is necessary for disciplining the mind than writing. Writing letters. We'd much rather pick up the telephone, although long distance, than we say to ourselves, well, my telephone bill last month already was. Then laboriously I sit down to write. People like to receive letters. If you don't know that, just think of how pleased you are to get a letter, right? Write letters. Now, pardon me for saying this, but it's not how much you write. And I have to say this. The Lord wants me to. About 11 o'clock, we pick up our mail at the university in Detroit. I pull out the letters, and I don't have to look to see whom the letters are from. The thick letters are from women. Some would rather swim across the Pacific than write a letter. It's not how much you write, it's what you say. Write. And if I can recommend, even if possible before the end of the retreat, whom should I write letters to? Think through what you're going to say. Even a word, a paragraph or two. Write. In other words, if we're going to earn heaven, we have to work. Human nature, naturally. Here's the sequence of human nature in terms of work. We naturally do first what is pleasant, and secondly, something which is useful. And finally, what is necessary? That's human nature. I've got more term papers from my graduate students in New York by express mail. They knew they had to write the term paper, so they waited to the last minute, stayed up maybe two nights, and finally finished it. Authentic charity. We're concentrating, you notice, on the practice of charity to earn heaven as a reward. And if you do this every day, your lives are made until eternity. Find out what is necessary each day, then what is useful, and then what is pleasant. Work. One of my favorite passages in the Old Testament is, man is born to labor as a bird is born to fly. Homo ad laboriam, avis ad volatum. Work. Let's face it. Among the seven capital sins, but it's somewhat poetic, sloth. Most people don't mind being called slothful. Well, they sure hate to be told they are lazy. We are naturally lazy. Assume that. Ask, O Lord, before the end of the retreat. Now be sure you are sure that He wants you to do it. Never to waste a moment of time. Crossing the border doesn't change. We are living in, we call it a leisure society. I prefer calling it a lazy society. Christ tells us we're going to be held accountable for every member idle word. Work. I hate to leave this part one. I've got, gosh, did I say seven to go? Budget your days. I mean it. Have some kind of a program, schedule. Most people, I think, drift. And even when they're doing, say, some job, they have an employment. And when employers, many of course, make retreats that I give, they tell me, the hardest thing to get out of my employees is 40 hours of work. Oh, they'll be there for 40 hours, all right. Well, they have coffee breaks. Do you have tea breaks? Yep. All kinds of excuses for not doing work. Did you know that prayer is work? Prayer is work. Just to stay awake. When we were in the novitiate, we were living in a dormitory, and there were six desks, each with a prie-dieu, against the windows, two doors into each dormitory. And we were to meditate for 1 hour, to be exact, 55 minutes, from 5:30 to 6:25, and then we'd go to Mass. Well, we didn't know when he would come in. But there was a visitor appointed by the novice master. And the visitors, by the way, were rotated to keep them from being bribed. Quietly open the door and walk through the dormitory and see what posture the six novices were in. Well, there were three possible postures. You had a preacher, you could be kneeling. Or you could stand. Or Well, you had a chair and a very comfortable desk to lay your head on. One of my fellow novices, Delmar by name, he could be sound asleep standing up. We asked him, "Del, how do you do it?" He said, "It's a gift." That if we were in the normally, you know, very restful, relaxed posture, we should be praying. Instead, we had our hands in our hands and lying on the desk, he'd be calling by the novice master. This was your posture on Tuesday of this week. Are you sick? No, we weren't sick. We were just lazy. That's the first meaning of heaven. It's a reward. We've got to use our free wills. We must work. We must plan. And on that same level, before I leave this reward, examine yourselves every evening. I'm making this resolution for all of you. This is St. Ignatius. We are told by rule to make the examination of conscience twice a day. And I've been doing this now, I can't believe it, 54 years, every day. I've invented my own hieroglyphs. If anybody looks at my examination of conscience, they couldn't imagine what the curious letters stand for. I examine myself on how much I talk each day. I want to be autobiographical, so you know I'm talking from my heart. I examine my conscience and how much time I've spent in sleep. I did tell you I'm under obedience. Did I tell you that? Be sure that I'm obedient. I check. The amount of time I spend in prayer, besides my Mass and Divine Office. And if somebody thinks I'm a vain fool for saying this, so be it. I try to spend 3 hours a day, every day, in prayer, besides my Divine Office and Mass. And we have failings, we have weaknesses. You've got yours, I sure have mine. No speeches, some hieroglyph that nobody else could possibly decipher. Examine your conscience. Keep a record of it. Once more, heaven is a reward. Secondly, heaven is the beatific vision. In this life, we can only believe in God. And our love for Him depends on our faith in Him. But in heaven, as we are told, the language is symbolic, but behind that symbolism is profound truth. We will see Him face to face. In trying to explain, when I teach, say, eschatology, big, long, polysyllabic term for, you know, the four last things. What are the four last things? Death, judgment, heaven, and be sure to add hell. I tell my students, the beatific vision means that we have the vision. We see God on earth. Who is the one person whom we know the best? On earth, who is the one human being that we know the best? Ourselves. our minds can only begin to grasp what this means. But the beatific vision means we shall see God in a way analogous to the way we see ourselves. And there is nobody but nobody on earth whom we know better than we know ourselves. That's what the term face-to-face vision means. That's what intuitive vision of God means. Hear it. They will not even, this has been defined by the church, they will not even be the interposition of thoughts between our minds and God. Even when we know ourselves, we still have to use thoughts necessarily, which are creatures, conceptions we call them, of our minds, through which our knowledge even of ourselves is mediated. But in heaven we shall see God as far as we creatures can, as God sees himself. That's the vision. And then the adjective, beatific. Beare in Latin means to be happy. Beatificare means to be made happy. And the Latin has, unlike us, has all kinds of words for happiness. The highest form of happiness is beatitude. So much the beatific vision. Thirdly, heaven is the end of all pain. Oh, by the way, the English word end, as in other languages too, but surely in English, has two very different meanings. It means the finish, the conclusion, the end of the day. But end also means what? Purpose. Heaven is the end of all pain in both senses. Am I clear? End is both the conclusion, the finish of pain. But heaven is also the purpose of pain. That's why, in case nobody told you, we suffer on earth. It's all this difficulty. Physical, spiritual, pain that we experience. The end or purpose of that pain is heaven. In this life, let's never run away from pain. Always assuming it is God's will that he wants something done, and in plain English, we don't like to do it. The philosophical definition of pain is whatever is contrary to the created will. We like pancakes. This is the seventh day in a row that we've had, say, pardon me, I'm not making any comments here. Say toast. Well, you don't make a speech about it, but in its own way, it's pain. Unsatisfied desires cause pain. And we have some strange, bizarre desires. This is St. John in his book, Apocalypse of Revelation, 21, verses 2 to 4. You see this city, This is John writing. Now, of course, it's a revelation he's receiving, by the way, from our Lord. Here God lives among men. He will make his home among them. They shall be his people, and he will be their God. His name is God with them. He will wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there will be no more death, and no more mourning or sadness. The world of the past has gone. Won't that be great in the thousandth century of eternity? You look back at those dark, dreary days. The days of the past will have gone. And they will. This is our faith. That's what our life is all about, right? On earth, my notes tell me to tell you, on earth doing God's will includes pain. Ask our Lord for the secret of doing things which are painful, that are difficult, but enjoying the experience. This is one of my meanings of the supernatural. Supernatural is that which gives pleasure while the natural is experiencing pain. How's that? And it's real. Again in heaven, doing God's will excludes all sorrow and sadness and suffering. Let's recite the Our Father just till I tell you to stop. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Stop. What we're praying for in that petition is that we on earth might do God's will as it is being done in heaven. Question. How is God's will being done in heaven? First of all, does everybody do it?
Yes.
That's quite unlike what's going on earth. Everybody is doing it. Secondly, in heaven, everybody is doing God's will perfectly. And best of all, everybody in heaven is enjoying doing God's will. This is one of my descriptions for growth in holiness. You become more holy as you don't rush it, as you gradually come to enjoy doing God's will. That's the fourth feature of the meaning of heaven, perfect happiness. We ask, what do we mean when we say that heaven means perfect happiness? What's perfect about the happiness in heaven? Well, I have seven qualities. First, heaven is perfect happiness because there will be no mixture of pain. Secondly, heaven is perfect happiness because heaven is the fulfillment of all our desires conformed to the will of God. Again, in heaven, perfect happiness, there'll be no fear of losing what we have. On earth, we are understandably scared. No matter what we've got, but there's always danger of losing it. Again, in heaven, there'll be no sadness over what others enjoy. Oh, Let me repeat. Let me repeat. A lot of people, they may know their English well, but they may not be all that up on their theology. And they may, without realizing it, confuse jealousy and envy. I am jealous of what I have that I don't want to share. I envy what someone else has that I lack. Could you mind closing the window just a little bit? Don't mind, please. Thanks. Please?
Could you please repeat that?
Oh, yes. Most people do not distinguish theologically between envy and jealousy. But in the church's vocabulary, to be jealous is to possess and not want to share. To envy is to lack and to be sad that someone else has what I lack. I am 65, say. She is a bright, sprightly 19. Well, and there's nothing, there's no power on earth that can change our ages. Yet, we can envy another person what they have, where there wouldn't be a chance in the world of our getting what they possess. Envy is strange. Envy is not greed. Envy is simply sadness at another person's having what I lack or succeeding where I have failed. So in heaven, there is no envy. That's why it's perfect happiness. In this life, the single most devastating source of conflict between people is envy. We could hear talk for hours. Envy between husband and wife. Envy between brothers and sisters. Well, I know, envy among the students. I was in second year high school, class in algebra. We'd had a test before, we got our papers back. We were seated in alphabetical order. Hardin, and behind me was Hartman. And as we got our papers back, they were graded. Hartman looked over my shoulder and he said, "You smart guys, that's me." Now, he could have said anything, but here's what he said. "I'll bet I'll get to heaven before you do." Sophomore in high school. That was like maybe the late fall. That May, Hartman had a tooth extracted, and the dentist left some of the bone in the jaw. The jaw infected, maybe before some of the miracle drugs were discovered. Gordon died in May of his sophomore year. When I visited him, I said to myself, I didn't dare tell him, "Gordon, you bum, you were right." You know what I'm saying. Why is heaven perfect happiness? Because there will be no covetousness or greed. And let's remember, not everybody will be equally happy in heaven. You try to put that combination on earth and you don't have perfect happiness. Just for the record, heaven is not a democracy. There will be then complete satisfaction of the desires of our souls and of our bodies after the last day. We might just for a moment stress the body participating in the joys of heaven. How many times in the morning I get back to the morning again? He might have liked to tell, say, the soul could tell the body. Now look,